Hello, I'm Stephen Fry, a trustee of the Royal Academy of Arts and very proud to be so. Welcome to our podcast.
This evening's lecture is part of a season of debates, talks, lectures and an exhibition the RA has organised to explore the future of housing. It's a question that has become increasingly urgent in recent years, and with the country now gripped by a housing crisis, housing is now one of the key issues in the lead up to this year's general election, which very much provides the backdrop to our season. This evening, however, we take an international perspective to welcome Tatiana to the Royal Academy. This lecture and the earlier roundtable discussion on housing in Mexico, we've put together as part of a broader programme that is part of 2015 as the UK-Mexico dual year of bilateral cooperation. And it's my great pleasure to invite His Excellency, Mr. Diego Gomez Pickering, Ambassador of Mexico, to say a few words about this endeavour and to introduce Tatiana, Ambassador.
Thank you very much, Owen. It's a great pleasure for me to be at this beautiful building that serves as the headquarters of the Geological Society in London. I'm very happy to see that Tatiana Bilbao's conference has attracted so many of you today. And in that this series, The Future of Housing, as Owen was rightly pointing, provides us a platform to discuss the challenge not only in the UK, but also beyond its borders, like it is in Mexico, the challenge that is to find and to think of housing in the future. It's certainly a thing that both of us, as countries and societies, share, and a thing that both of us can think together in order to find a more affordable and certainly attractive solution. This conference is part of an ambitious program that we have prepared along with the UK for the British audiences to celebrate the Year of Mexico in the United Kingdom. The government of Mexico has lined up more than 100 activities that include exhibitions, concerts, festivals, academic workshops, artistic residences, as well as trade missions, business forums, and conferences like the ones we have today. There are also research projects, grants, scholarships, a great number of activities that celebrate a very long-standing relationship, that of Mexico and Britain, a relationship that has been in place for almost 200 years. The cultural program of the Year of Mexico in the UK was built as an interdisciplinary model that highlights the rich millenary past of our country and its tradition, and at the same time contributes to portray Mexico's contemporary art in the global scene, and the dynamism of its creative industries through cinema, music, visual arts, design, literature, and, of course, architecture. We're very excited that Tatiana, one of Mexico's most renowned young architects, and who has worked in very different projects all over the country, from the botanical gardens in Culiacán, to the funeral house in San Luis Potosí, the Universe House, designed alongside contemporary artist Gabriel Orozco, in Puerto Escondido, Oaxaca, or the Center for Scenic Arts in Guadalajara. We're very excited that she is here with us today to share her vision on the future of housing. Just last year, Tatiana received the Global Award for Sustainable Architecture, and I am sure this is one of many more awards to come in her very bright career. I'm happy to see that a new generation of Mexican architects have been garnering recognition, applause, and admiration. Their expressive quality, innovation, and visual impact is being showcased around the world, and I'm hoping these and other platforms will serve to debate and find solutions to public and living spaces. I would like to extend special thanks to Owen Hopkins and the Architecture Department team, as well as to Manuel Díaz-Ebrián, for their enthusiasm and invaluable support in promoting quality architecture in the United Kingdom, and for including among their speakers today Mexican exponents like Tatiana and, of course, Infonavit's Director General, who's here as well, the great friend Alejandro Murat. Exponents of the reality of contemporary Mexico and exponents of the great creative impact that we have, a creative impact that we want to share with UK audiences. I hope all of you enjoy this evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. Now, just before Tatiana comes to the stage, just say a few words about her. As we've heard, she's one of Mexico's leading architects and is part of a generation of Mexican architects who are increasingly making their mark on the world stage. She graduated from the Universidad Iberoamericana in 1996 and in 1998 served as advisor to the Ministry of Urban Development and Housing of the Federal District. She works across building types and scales, creating buildings of powerful geometry which connect to their sites and users on both material and emotional levels. I'm not going to list a number of her works because we'll see a great deal of them, I'm sure, very shortly. But just to mention a couple of other things, in 2012 she received the prestigious Kunstpreis Berlin and is currently visiting professor at the Yale School of Architecture. Please join me in welcoming Tatiana.
Thank you very much, Owen, and thank you, the Royal Academy, and thank you, the Mexican Embassy in the UK, Mr. Pickering, for having me here. I'm really honored to be speaking tonight to you. I thought I explained my vision on housing through my work and focusing especially on what we've done with housing. I like to talk about it as home. So I will start a little bit showing you that in the beginning when I started working, I had beautiful commissions such as a botanical garden where we are continually working, or a building for a university. We created building for a concert hall or a funeral house, and we've worked also for a pilgrimage route. And it was really beautiful to be participating in these incredible projects that had just amazing programs. But always something was in my mind, that I was not working really for what I think architecture is responsible for, which is housing. Definitely a secondary, or not a secondary, also a very important thing is working in the environment, in the public space, but the most urgent need for someone is their own private space. And we were not working on it, and that was worrying in me. And we were not working, not even in great commissions for incredible houses. We were not working in dwelling at all. So, but finally, for my interest and my preoccupation for it, we started working, first inventing our own work for dwelling, and I will explain that later on, and now being commissioned. So right now we're trying to explore also different types of, or different ways of possibilities of dwelling and inhabiting a place, such as this project in the outskirts of Barcelona, in which we are trying to experiment how to use a flat land to create diverse situations in it and perspectives. So we thought of different ways of approaching the idea of getting to understand the landscape and achieve the comprehension of it by using the part of the valley, by going up and having the landscape around you, or by going down and using the creek. And this is how we develop this scheme, which is now going to be built in the outskirts of Spain. So as I said, we're not only experimenting with what a dwelling means, but also what the experience of it means to enhance life. We, as I said, had many different commissions, and not only in terms of program, but also in terms of scale and in terms of diversity of the people who inhabited. So a house that we worked 10 years ago, more or less, 9 years ago, was this house in the outskirts of Monterrey, the second largest city in Mexico. second most important one as well. And and the client asks us for a flat house. And when he shows us the site, we said, you want a flat house in this hill? It's going to be kind of hard. We dig the half of the mountain to do that, or we create a structure that flies out. So one of my understandings of architecture is really to be able to build architecture, and that means including many things. That means including the needs of the client, the needs of the place, the needs of the context, the needs of the ruling, of the budget. And in this case, a client wanted a flat house, and I went into it and went, why would you like a flat house? And he wanted the fluidity of the space of a house of one floor. And he wanted to live like that. So I said, we need to translate that into an architecture that goes with the site. So we created a system where we started with a pentagon, and we decomposed the pentagon to adapt it to the mountain, to the topography, to the trees. And by doing so, we created a series of cells that were attaching to each other, that that were spaces by itself. And when we put them together, you create a fluid space that, going from the living room to the dining room to the kitchen, it takes you only one or two steps. So the fluidity of the space is there. Obviously, there's a trick, and you can go directly with a set of stairs and meander through the house more directly. But the whole idea is that you have the experience of going up little by little, so you really have the fluidity of the experience. No, when I started studying, parametric architecture was the thing to go, and I learned through it. I learned in the moment where parametric architecture was the way to go. And obviously, as being a young student and then a young architect going out to build things, I was trying to do things that were new, that were global, that were there. And so I started working and trying to figure out how to discover, if there was something to discover there, uncharted geometry. So I was trying to look for what could uncharted geometries give us to space, give us to architecture, give us to building things. And I realized that that it was quite compelling, part of what the house in Ventura was about that. And I continued working on that until we arrived to this commission, which is a very strange commission, because it was what we had to achieve was to build this house, which was designed by Gabriel Orozco, designed or mainly taking the idea from a existing observatory in India named the Jantar Mantar in Delhi. And what he wanted to do is he wanted to create this observatory, to transform it into a house, and build it here in this beautiful beach in the south coast of Mexico. So we help him. We help doing this translation. But the most important translation we did was how to really achieve and build this thing in this site. It looks simple. It's a simple scheme. It's a semisphere with four rooms, which it truly looks simple. And for us, when we were developing the plans, was very straightforward. And what we did, because we were working with Gabriel Orozco, which he's a little obsessive man, very fun and incredibly amazing person to work with, but obsessive nevertheless. And so we developed, like, we were during 8 months, we were developing plans and drawings and beautiful drawings and testing things in the office, doing mock-ups and doing, again, beautiful drawings, and then again a new set of drawings. And we arrived in sight. We decided, since we started of thinking of this house, to use the people of the little village to build it. And for many reasons. No? It was the correct thing to do, but it was not only the correct thing to do, it was a good thing to do because they knew the place, they knew the things that we needed, to someone to complement us on it, the little local things about it. No? So in this remote place, it was really good. It was also good to connect with the community, so many, many things. But for the construction was very, very challenging. Because these people were totally unqualified to do this work. And for me, that like eye-opener was very important because these people, definitely, they don't know even how to read. Imagine plans. Forget about it. The plans were done, beautiful, saved in our office, never in the construction site. And what I realized and what was most important and I think a turning point for my career was that these people is the people that mostly mainly work in the construction business in Mexico and in many parts of the world, but in Mexico, it's what it is. And it's really an amazing hand labor that we have, incredibly creative, absolutely dedicated and willing to do whatever in a very low and affordable way, which that brings also another consequences, but that's another story and another lecture, and we will not go into that. But they're definitely not qualified, and it was already hard enough to make this house, this simple geometry with a semisphere and walls that support the semisphere, was really difficult to build in this environment with this hand labor. Was very, very grateful. It was amazing at the end, and I could say many things about it. And as I said, the most important thing we learned from it was that this is the people that we're building our architecture with. And then, therefore, to design with it, how we could really understand contemporary architecture, propositive, and achieving what we wanted to achieve with architecture with the conditions we have. So parametric architecture was totally out of the question, but also what I was searching on uncharted geometries suddenly didn't make any more sense at all because, as I said, who would build it and then why? We would really be able to build incredible architecture in our context, not needing nothing else but the beautiful resources that we have with geometry and composition. So from then we started doing a series of houses that were contemplating these things, and that also the house from Gabriel Orozco was very helpful to, as for example of understanding that having windows in a beach side is windows as glass in this weather is kind of not necessary. So then we created a house that it depends in. It's totally open. It's only two platforms. It has no glass at all. It has shutters in case you want to and have more privacy to sleep, but it doesn't bring a single glass in, which is a total foreign material. So materials, something that I think, and in many ways you see and you say, concrete is not natural material and sustainable material. Well, in Mexico is, because why? We don't have wood, for example. We don't have wood plantations. So wood is the worst sustainable material you can imagine in Mexico. We don't have many resources, technological resources. So the best materials is what you can get from gravel, from the mine behind. I know what comes with it, etc., and we can also go into that discussion. But this is a good material to use. And if you don't add the materials that are imported, at least from these regions, like glass, then it becomes really materials that you can get in the locality. But then we discover a material that is much more incredible, that it doesn't work everywhere, but in some places it worked, which is the compacted earth. And we discover it because it's a material that it's been used since the start of the humanity, but we never thought of it, we never used it, and this is why I say discovered for us, and we discovered it because we got this commission of the sister of a very important curator in Mexico, Patrick Charpenel, and her sister Vivian approached us and said that she wanted a house being built and designed by us in this beautiful land with a view to the lake, in the back to the mountains, beautiful place. And she had an idea of building a house of 300 square meters, more or less, with big double height, a studio, walk-in closet, etc. Her dream weekend house. And then she said, I only have 1.5 million pesos, which is around less than 80,000 pounds, more or less, I guess. And so that's very little budget, even in Mexico. I think here it sounds ridiculous, but in Mexico it's still a very small budget. So then we said, okay, she left the office, and I said, it's going to be impossible. She needs to or increase the budget in double or decrease her idea of house in half, at least, so we can achieve something interesting. And then I thought, then she's going to go away, and we're not going to be able to do architecture. So as I said in the beginning, I believe that architecture is a built environment, and we all can do incredible projects and dream about them, and I love to dream about architecture because of that, those dreams, when they become reality, they really change the world. But we also have to make architecture, and we have to work for people. And these people have restrictions. And if I would have tell her to decrease her dreams, that would be really sad. And to increase the budget, that was not a question. She didn't have the money. Just didn't have the money. So I thought, no, we need to do something. We need to work it out. We need to really find a solution, because then we were doing architecture, what the responsibility of architecture it is. So we got into the idea of understanding a material that would allow us this. We needed definitely a material that could be everything, that could be the structure, that could be the insulation, that could be the final aesthetic definition at the same time. So we were wondering on these kind of materials. Obviously, concrete was out of the way because of the costs. As I said, wood in Mexico is not even a question. Steel, forget about it. Then brick came into the table, but brick needs a substructure. So then, not so well performing. And then I remember I was recently at a project of Mauricio Rocha, another very incredible Mexican architect and colleague that at the time recently finished an art school in Oaxaca. And I called him and said, Mauricio, you need to tell me everything about compacted earth. And he did. He was very kind. And then after that, understanding the material and how it worked and how it performed and how it was its best performance, we designed with those inputs. So we understood the thickness, what was like the correct one to do it. So we didn't push the material to the limit. That was the first thing we had to do for achieving the budget. And we didn't push the construction restrictions to the limit with the material, meaning that the best idea was to hire the guy that already did the work for Mauricio and did already many many tests on it. So he knew. He even built for Mauricio's building. A framework, that a steel framework that was still working. So by using those things, we were able to achieve the budget. So we designed within those constraints. So what we did is a very simple move of making two squares that contain the more public area of the house one of it and the more private area of the house in the other one, and by overlapping two other ones and creating there the services for the two areas, we created just the design. We lifted up the roofs in different directions so they could achieve the views to the lake or to the mountain, depending on the space, more public to the lake, the more public space, and the more private to the mountains. The slabs, the roof, and the floor, they're concrete. This way we could achieve foundations at the same time as waterproofing roof for the house. So, as I said, we wanted to achieve a very efficient, for else to say it, way of building. And obviously the interiors are very raw, very simple, because the budget would allow us and take us to create a house of the dimensions and proportions that she asked, but nothing else. The tubes you see there, they're not structured. They're the water drainage from the two tilted roofs. And in the case of the exterior, these two tubes, which also help as the drainage, rainwater drainage system, help support the overhanging structure for the terrace. I was amazingly glad when the client decided to get involved when we were doing the research of the compacted earth. And she, I think this is one of the other achievements that I've learned through this process, that it was how important is when the person that you're designing, it's involved in the design itself. And someone was saying there, and Amy was saying in the round table that, and sorry, in the round table that building your own house is like building your own cake, and you become proud of it, and it becomes your space. And so I've learned that we architects should be more the providers of the platform and for the people to create their own designs. And I'm glad to say that in this case we did and we managed. Finally, we started working in social housing, and this was 8 years ago. And this is our first approach to what we've been very political about it. Since very long time ago, as I said in the beginning, realizing that the most needed was that architects return to the housing discussion. And I think for now, that would be really a change. That would be the future of housing. In resume, if we architects go back into the story of producing it. And I was very worried about what was happening in Mexico, about these units that were being built at the moment we built this one, of repetitive single houses, 20,000 units. And then it came this problem. It's a little town in the outskirts of Mexico City where big rain happened, and the hills on the side started to crumble around, and they took away many houses for the people who were living in the skirts of the hills. It's an angeon, 600 people, 600 families lost their homes, and the government proposed a plan of doing these little white boxes, aligned sleeping coffins, as I call them. And we were able to enter the discussion and say, please don't do that. You're going to create, the only thing you're going to do is a place where you're going to spend a big amount of money for 600 families that in 2 years are going to return to the living in the hills, because this would be a horrible place for them. So it was a very political thing, and it was very difficult to convince the government. And finally we did. And we convinced them that they allow us at least to create the urban environment. So the negotiation went that we couldn't change the design of the house, but we could do the urban development. So we created a total different scheme originally, and I'm sorry I didn't have the original one, but the original idea was to wipe out everything and do straightforward houses of aligned homes, 20 or 30 at the same time without a street in between, and just aligned in a perfect straight line with an incredible topography and a beautiful landscape. It didn't matter. And at that time, I was saying, well, okay, the house, the typology of the house, of the small unit needs to change. Yeah, definitely. But in 43 square meters, which is still what you can get for this amount of money normally in the workers' housing system, it's very little. There's very little things to do, or a lot has been done to improve these 43 square meters. And obviously, some of the houses work and do better, but it's very little change. So my example was always New York. New York City, people pay millions of dollars for a 30 square meter studio in a dark, horrible a building that it's falling apart. And why? Because of the environment. Why? Because what the city offers. Why? Because the city pays that. Because the city is your home. Because the city has incredible jobs, has incredible culture, and has incredible education, health services, etc. So if you're not able to provide that, then the 43 square meters become very, very important. So I think that the discussion goes into topics. So in this case, we lose the battle designing the 43 square meters, but we won the battle of designing the urban environment. And what we did is what we convinced them to use the same single repetitive design they had and to use it in different ways, to create dwellings of two floors, two different dwellings that are on top of each other, so density, to create some of them that are in single plots, and to create a diversity for the people. People are different. They're not numbers. They're people, and they're individuals. And luckily enough, people, when they just moved, they started getting appropriation of the space, and they really now are really taking advantage of this space. And I think that what we created, differentiating the little neighborhoods and doing this idea of creating more density within the center of this unit and more and less density to the rest, would really allow diversity to happen, to be. And it does. It's happening, and it's been very successful. We also designed a little bit the public area and the city center, and what we did is we created a design with bricks, because these people normally work with bricks, and this is a region that they do bricks. And we said these people should build it, and that's next part of the process of it. It hasn't been built yet, but our idea was we design it, and they build it themselves, however it goes. So as I said, we're being part of the discussion, and it's really hard to change things. So in the beginning, I arrived with very radical ideas, right, of changing the way these units were produced with developers, because this is the people that are doing them. It's private developers, and they have very little constraints and very little rules and to do them. So basically, they can do whatever they want, almost. I mean, I'm reducing it to a limit, but it does. And so when I started being very political about it, I realized that it was going to be very difficult to change it, like, radically. So I finally accepted, which is, it's not conformistic. I believe that it's idealistic. I finally accepted that we needed to work with these people, and we needed to understand their needs, and we needed to create something different, slightly different, every time we go into a new project. So this project was the start of it. So we got involved with this private developer in Veracruz, which is a state in Mexico, in the Gulf Coast of Mexico. And he's a very traditional developer doing these units that I described of 20,000 identical boxes. And And in this case, we couldn't get along or allowed to do much in the urban design, but we did. We were able to reduce the size of the houses. We were able to reduce the idea of having all the cars in the front. And we were able to change certain things and to create a new development. But we were, I think that the most successful part of it was that we turned around at least the mind of one developer. So we're going there. There are 2,800, but one by one. And what we did is we created a design. First, it was totally, as I said, the urban planning that was there was completely changed. And secondly, we totally conceived the unit in a very different way as they normally see it. And we created a patio that we use to create different typologies. And a patio like that in the middle of a house was never there. And that allowed us to create different possibilities to have houses of different sizes, different typologies, different ways of using the patio. And with that, we created a diversity that it was lacking. We convinced him with numbers, with papers, that they will cost the same and that the system was very easy to do it. But he didn't believed us at the beginning. Then he put his team to test that. And when we passed that line, he said, okay, I believe you. It will cost you the same, but you know what? People is not going to like it. And I said, well, this is what you say, but what people say is like, no, I know the market. I've been there forever. People are not going to like it. They like these houses, identical houses, where they believe they are part of this dream land, and they're almost realizing the American dream, as we call it in Mexico, no? So we said, well, why don't we do a focus group? And they said, okay, that's perfectly good. We do a focus group, and they're going to say no. So they did a focus group without us in the table, and they called us and you said, yeah, as we told you, they hate the houses. No one would buy them. Do another thing. Ciao. And I was like, no, wait. We need to participate in the same focus group. Put the same people in the table. We go there, and we explain the project. And we did, and the people loved the houses. So that's what we achieved. We changed the mind of this guy. One, and we are starting the construction of this place, which I'm very glad to say. And as I say, probably for me, it's not yet what it needs to be. But we have to go little by little. And I hope we could change things like immediately the next day. And that's one of my things I have in life. But with this project, I learned to breathe and to think that little by little, then you can do a big change. We, at the same time, and just by chance, this was obviously all the commissions in Mexico of social housing we're working, they are, because we've been very political, we've been very involved with these people, and that's why it comes. But by chance, we get a commission to build social housing in France. This is Lyon. Lyon, it's expanding to a former industrial area near this, just behind the city center. This is the city center, and this is Lyon La Confluence. Half of it, or a third part of it, has been built. It's been a new development of mixed use, and the two-thirds left developed in a master plan by Herzog and Emeron. And the city decided to create to build the first block of this new phase that it's going to be built, that it's here. And for that, he asked Herzog and Emeron to decide what to do with it. And they decided to choose three different architects, one local firm, to create this first block. What is was very impressive for me since I arrived was that this is a block of mixed use, normal. But the thing is, this is an incredible luxury residential tower, and this is social housing, and this is social housing, and this is social housing, and this is luxury enough, and this is very high-end offices buildings. That's for me equality. That's what really a society can do to build up and to really create a democracy. This is giving the same opportunities to the same to all the people. These people are going to have the same public space, the same transport system, the same stores, the same school, the same medical service. They definitely have totally different incomes. So these people are going to pay millions for their apartment. These people are going to pay nothing because they're subsidized by the government. So it's amazing for me that way of thinking. And that's France. And they've changed that since they hit their heads with the wall doing social housing in the outskirts of every city, as they did in the post-war, as we are doing in Mexico. And they did that 40 years ago, and only now they're just starting to really see the transformation, and not yet. You've seen all the problems that this housing that in France has created. But understanding these, and at the same time doing research, I was invited from a government trip to do a visit to France to understand social housing there, also more in deepness, not only working there, gave me a big opportunities to think very clear. What most struck me when we were asked to do the design was that we, as I said, had three buildings. So one is two social housing and one is residential. This is social housing. This is the Herzog & Nemeron Tower. This is our building. And they asked us to build, to create a design that would target £1,000 per square meter of construction. And I say, okay, what about what price we have to target for the residential building, for the free market building, the more luxury residential? And they say the same. And I was impressed. This was, for me, the most impressive part of the story. And then further on, going and moving to the design, we're allowed to do anything in the housing projects, like having wood balconies, which is, I think, very, very nice for the space, but not in the free market one. This is the most funny part of the story. They're asking us for ceramic tiles, and we're like, that's horrible. Can we put wood? No. But in the social housing, yes, yes. Very good. Well, okay. Yeah, I don't quite like it because I don't quite like the result on the other building, but I love the idea that they're not fighting for the social housing. And what we did for these buildings is a very simple move of reminding them where they come and where the good things that they did, because they're rejecting totally what they did in the past. Because obviously the model wasn't correctly enough. But there were very good things that Le Corbusier gave to the model, not only bad things that now everybody's talking about, which is the mid-level, the split of the levels in the homes gives privacy. And it nowadays, especially where spaces have been very reduced and reduced and more reduced every day, this gives an incredible solution to a very small space. So we decided to remind them. Obviously, we have an incredible legacy in Mexico as well of this typology, which is Mario Pani, and this is our first reference. But we said, listen, this comes from here. And so that was the only move we were able almost to do in this building. But I think that by creating that and creating these spaces that start to become communal spaces within the private place, it gives a little something. And the building number 7, which is also social housing, what we did is we couldn't create this the minivo typology, but we decided to create every single apartment in a different way. So every person lives in the building has a different configuration. It's an individual. It has a different apartment, although they're very small, as I said, but having these shifts with the facade, that was very hard to do. I'm not going to go into the story, but we created that. Whereas in the free market one, what we did was only a very slight move that you're almost not able to see, that it's creating larger windows in the down floors and smaller windows in the high floors, obviously because of the performance of energy. And in this way, we created just an elegant, repetitive thing that just by the elegance of it and the simplicity of it would become something attractive, we thought. But most importantly, we decided to push it through and create public spaces within the private building. The last project I'm going to show, it's a project that we've worked recently and that I think it's an incredible future for Mexico. So first, a very long time ago, we created House A in Ordos, Mongolia, which came from a very traditional or like archetypical form of a house that we all have in mind. And what we created was a modulated system that when we subtracted a part of that module, created the house. Why? Because then we wanted to be this house that would be able to ventilate and illuminate from within its own volume. That led us to think about module, and that led us to an incredible project that we're doing now. Modularity can become flexibility to grow, can become something that obviously has been researched longly, and there are many, many, many solutions, but that would allow us to fulfill our willings in this commission. And we were approached by a financial institution that gives small credits to these people that are really under they're the base of the pyramid. They're not formal workers. They cannot go into a social housing credit or mortgage. And these people are even subsidized by the government. So we needed to create a house that went not on top of 120,000 pesos, which is more or less, I would say, 6,000 pounds, a little bit less than 6,000 pounds. And we needed to be right on budget, because when you achieve that budget for a house, you get the subsidy from the government. So the people need to pay only half, depending on their income, but more or less the half of it. So we needed to achieve the price, and our goal was to give more square meters than what we could possibly build with that money, and what that was built till the moment. So how do we do that? We remember our model from Ordos, and we remember it in a very interesting way, because we first decided, okay, we want to do that. We want to create more space for the people for the same money, and how do we do it? So we studied all the designs that were existing in the market, and well, not all, obviously, that's always never a good word to say, but many of the designs that were there. And when we finally got to a point where we're saying, we don't know these people, we're designing for ourselves, and we're designing copying models or looking into models, not copying, doing research on that. And we need to design for these people, and we need to understand them. So we went and asked the financial institution if we could do interviews, and we did around 2,000 interviews with the people. And that was a very interesting process of understanding what they wanted. So first of all, what we understood is that they wanted a house that looked like the house. This is what they told us. As I said, we were thinking on doing a flat roof with movable walls or a system that would become a roof and a wall in these things. And then they said, really, we want a house that looks like a house. And why? Because in their minds, in their collective minds, there's this landscape of Mexico of these gray houses with the steel bars out that were used to be an aspirational thing, because people would build the first floor, leave the steel bars out in order to come back and do the second floor. But was never achieved. So now, in the minds of these people, is that's a saying of failure, of absolute failure, because you were not able to achieve that. And so that's, therefore, that's why they really wanted a house that looks like her house. And when we said, well, we want you to give you a possibility of expansion, and they said, yeah, but the first thing, it needs to be a house, it needs to be look finished, and yeah, if we need to sacrifice something, it's that it looks finished, it's that it, we cannot expand it, but it needs to look finished. Second thing we understood was that they needed to, in the rural areas, very interesting how in the rural areas they want a really strong, durable material, and the suburban areas, they don't care. Why? Because in the rural areas, they see these homes for the rest of their lives. They see a house that it will last forever. And in the suburban areas, these people move and they're willing to arrive to the city, to the real city, so they don't care. They can use panel. So we used, this is why we used our model, our oldest model, to create this house that allows you to grow. And with adding, with building, with the budget that we could achieve, the square meters, with the hard material, and adding the industrial pallets to it, we were able to give more space. So now the house is 62 square meters in plan, but you have a double height, and you can increase it yourself, and it at the end, it ends up with almost 130 square meters. So we built two prototypes, one of the rural ones and one of the more urban ones. The also good thing for this model is that it's since it's modulated, it can get the different combinations of a house that is needed within the different cultures in Mexico and the different ways of living. So the more suburban house has a full, like, modern kitchen, and the rural one has a traditional kitchen, and this one has the bath toilet integrated into the living space, into the sleeping space, and the other one has a toilet outside. So these things are achievable within the same model because of the flexibility of it. So also that was very good. So as I said, we built two prototypes of these houses that are going to be built in the whole country, I hope, one day, or at least to start being built. And by the end of the year, we should have 100 of them more or less built. And I forgot to say, these places are built in their own plots. So people ask for these little loans, and they build these houses themselves or with a supervision. And if they build them themselves, it's even way cheaper. It's almost 30% cheaper than 6,000 pounds. If you get the thing whole completely built, it's 6,000 pounds. So I guess that for me, it's impossible that housing goes in the way that it's going now. It depends on the pound. So it's all about money, it's all about capitalism, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, the numbers are outrageous. £1,000 is a lot of money, and it takes you barely nowhere in major parts of the world. For me, the future of housing, it's aesthetically speaking, is that of including a diversity of ways of thinking and of living in the city, even in the vertical way. This is the cover of the magazine Domus we did in March 2012, and it's a cadaver esquisse, and it's a big story. I'm not going to go into it, but it shows a lot what I think that cities are and should be, but also in a vertical way. Why? Because we don't fit anywhere in anywhere else. People want to be in the cities, and people need to be in the cities, and we want them to be in the cities. This is what makes this society work. But I think totally that house is a personal achievement. It was make your life go round, and it's a home, as I said in the beginning. A house is not a pound, it's a home. The sum of homes makes a collective, makes a place, makes a city, creates a society. And we need a lot of homes to transform the idea that a house is a pound, that idea that today it goes into that at the end. So I would say that with that I can end off my presentation, and I would open it a little bit for questions and answer if we have a little time. Thank you very much.
You mentioned about how you're getting political at various moments in your talk, and
that was obviously manifested in your approach to architecture. Do you think there's a scope for architects to actually engage in politics itself?
I think we have to. I think there is no other way, because, as I said, we need to understand also the other side of the story in order to transform things. It's very good to dream and to think that you can change things and that things should be totally different from what they are. But you need to understand the other part of the story, because if not, then change will not happen. It would just become an incredible solution, graphically very beautiful. But if you don't understand the conditions where you can create it and go into it, then it's just going to stay there. And sometimes that at the end becomes reality, but it takes very long. So in order to really change, you need to be political and you need to understand, as I said, a little bit the other side of the story. So and by achieving like these changes little by little, and if we will do it, then we will be able to do it sooner.
Mm. Most architects in Britain, most of the time, if they design housing at all, are acting very, very market-driven situations. So it's not like the situation in Lyon, for example. Do you know how you would respond in those sort of circumstances? And are there circumstances in which you would just not do the job? I mean, if you're really not given a sort of room in which to invent or interpret?
I haven't got into any situations which I have to reject a job, but I would guess that there could be, I imagine. I definitely think that... now everything has become market-driven, everything. So this is my point, actually. This is something that really needs to change, because architecture shouldn't be market-driven. Architecture is a very important part of life. We can start from health. Health, it's becoming market-driven, and that shouldn't be the same as architecture. And I think architecture is playing the game, and architects as well, and me as well. I don't exclude myself from that, but I'm trying to not to. And when I say I'm trying not to, is I'm trying to understand the other side of the story, and understand that, well, these people have a total different vision, and how we can like really introduce a little bit and a little change, like in the project in Veracruz. We started with a very radical position when he asked us for the design. And I'm sorry I didn't put it there. It would have been a good one. And then I said, we're not going to achieve nothing. What we're going to do, what he's going to do, he's going to hire another architect. Or not the architect. He's going to do it in-house as he has done the past 30 years with a very successful business. So I said, we need to understand his necessities, and we need to understand a little bit, play a little bit his game, no, to change something. And as I said, we did. We managed to make him understand at least that an architect could give something. And definitely the spaces, I believe, and it's not because I'm praising my own work, but the spaces, just because they're designed and thought by someone, they're radically different in the quality that they're giving to the people. So I think that we have to really understand it and to try to work with it, because that's not going to change very soon, not at all. It's going to completely be worse.
Yes, hello. Do you have any plans to work in the UK?
I would love to, not currently, but I would love to, definitely would love to work in this environment. It has very different constraints and problems, and I would love to understand them and start working.
Tatiana, that was really fascinating and impressive. Following on from what you were saying earlier, wonderful to see the idea of architects becoming involved in new build in these developments in Mexico, and I loved in particular the emphasis on variety and public space. But what I'm thinking is, have you had any thoughts about how you might get involved in the rehabilitation of some of the existing developments? And is there any possibility that the abandoned homes, which at the moment are the sort of mark of failure, could perhaps in some way become a positive in the context of an architectural intervention?
That's a very good question, and thank you for asking, because I forgot to tell about it in the roundtable, that I think that what is still a little bit missing from the government policies is to think a little bit, to think on those 12 million people that are living in these places and what's going to happen with them. So I decided to work on it as a research first, and I'm working with my Yale students in five of these units. And when I presented the project to the Infonavit, they were very supportive, and they're sponsoring the studio in the school. So we are working in understanding these places, the abandonment reasons, but most of all, we're trying to propose what could be done. So we chose five specific cases, and we're doing a real project. We don't know if it's going to be built at the end. We hope that it might. The Carlos Cedillo, who we're working directly in the Infonavit, he says he wants to traduce to this into a real commission. But at least we are posing the question, and not the question, raising the minds of people that this is a really next thing to go there into it.
First of all, thank you. That was so inspiring and so interesting. I was interested in your idea that you were given a master plan, and your instinct was to fight against the master plan and say we could build design in at this level. And then if that had been solid, you'd say, okay, then maybe we deal with the house or we deal with the public space. Given that actually I think a lot of architects have that experience in the UK, what scale do you think you can be most effective at? If you were going to fight against one thing, what do you think would be the most effective thing to fight against?
As I said, I think in the space, in the public space, because obviously it's very important, these 43 square meters, but if you don't create an environment good enough, then these 43 square meters, even if they're incredibly good design, they're nothing. They're really not worth it. So I think that I would prefer or choose to work in the environment.
I've been lucky enough to visit Mexico City and be on site with a friend, architect. And it was a very interesting project, but I've seen different dynamics in terms of health and safety, and he talked through a few of the issues that he'd faced, like sudden strikes with workers. So I'd like to hear from you, what are the challenges that younger architects facing in Mexico now? Because it's very different to the UK, I believe.
Definitely. And I think that the challenges are more the opportunities. I think we, the young architects in Mexico, had incredible opportunities, and I think the much more than in the UK. I don't know very well the context, but a little bit like the same happens in Europe, much worse in the United States. There's really no good opportunities for young practices to emerge. But in Mexico, since the economy is becoming more stable, architecture is now again in the table. So it's a topic. So people are really getting architects to build their things. And since it was so bad for a number of years in the past in Mexico, the economy directly affecting architecture, there are very few remains of the older generation, the generation ahead of us. There are very few architects that really continued practicing. So when the stability came and of the economy came and people were looking for architects, there were no architects there. So all young people like me, I was just getting out of school. We just all of a sudden had incredible opportunities of building things that we were like just right out of school. We were saying among our colleagues, like, we are doing models one-to-one. It's like, it's crazy, you know? It's really crazy. And we are not so good, but the generation behind us, because of that, it's really becoming a very strong generation. It's an incredible, broad and rich new generation of architects working incredible in Mexico because of the opportunities. Creative people, it's everyone in the world. good people, good architects are always everywhere in the world, but you need the opportunities to build and to create your own practice. And in Mexico right now, it's an incredible ground for that.
On behalf of the Royal Academy, I'd like to thank Tatiana ever so much for a wonderful and inspiring lecture. For a wonderful lecture.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the Royal Academy, please visit www.royalacademy.org.uk.